Hey Nick, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks Martin. And you?
Yes, not bad at all, thanks, not bad at all. So what have you been up to then?
Well, yesterday I had my first surfing lesson.
Surfing? Where did that come from?
Well, I was out on Wednesday night with a couple of people from the co-working space, and they're all into surfing and stuff, and we're talking about how good the waves were and so on. And as the seasons are changing and it's getting a bit colder, I thought if I don't do it now, I won't do it until next year or, you know, if at all. So once I got in on Thursday morning and sobered up a bit and was working out whether it's a good idea or not, like early first thing, I sent an email to some surf instructor and he got straight back and said, oh, yeah, I could do lunchtime today. So
excellent.
Two hours later, I was in the water, splashing around, paddling away, and now my shoulders are absolutely killing me.
I'll agony. Teach you.
I nearly had to take paracetamol last night before I went to bed. They've been hurting so much.
Blimey. Yeah, it's hard work. I've been to Widmouth Bay before, which is down the road from you, and I've only really done it once, proper surfing, and we were there, and we were out there for hours. It was great fun, but it's knackering, Yeah, we had to be chased off by a helicopter as well.
Right.
Yeah, we were out there quite late in the day, and the weather had got turned a bit, and so we were out, and we looked around and could see everyone sort of going in, and we're thinking, what's going on? Why is everyone going in? And then this helicopter came down, and he came really low near us, and the guy in it was, you know, sort of indicating to us in no sort of uncertain terms we needed to get out of the water, so so off we went.
What time of the year was that?
It was probably not far off about now, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe there's a storm coming in or something.
Yeah. It was definitely end of the summer, and probably after the summer holidays, because we didn't have kids then, so...
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it's good. So what have you been doing work-wise recently?
Well, funnily enough, after we recorded our last podcast on 2 weeks ago, Friday, Google put an announcement up on their blog that Penguin was rolling out, Google Penguin. So that's the update that's link-related.
Okay.
If you've been buying bad links or getting bad links to your website, you can get a penalization on your website for it. And so it had been, I think, I'm not sure if it's a year or even 2 years since the last Penguin rollout had happened. And I remember back on the early days of the podcast, I've been complaining about it. So yeah, for it finally to roll out was a big event, really.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So did they say why it had taken so long, or is it just one of those things?
It's just, I think it's a difficult, well, the web is obviously such a big thing. It's a difficult problem to try and solve, really, of working out which links look like good links and which, or natural links, and which links look like people have paid for placements.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was watching a video earlier on, Rand Fishkin from Moz did, and it's kind of like, I remember having a discussion with it a while, with someone else a while ago, saying, because if you've got what you think are bad links to your site that perhaps, you know, even necessarily you haven't put there, if you're getting a negative SEO attack or something, you know, you can file a disavow file to Google, which points out which links are bad and which ones they should ignore.
Yeah.
And Rand was saying in the video, which is what we kind of chatted about ages ago, was saying that that disavow file was kind of almost like, you know, Google's information on what looks like a bad link, so that they can then build up a learning algorithm around it to be able to identify which are bad.
That's quite clever, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't think that's what would have taken them so long, because obviously, well, you don't know how many people they have working on this thing, but it has been a big issue, certainly. You know, if your site gets penalized and there's a whole year until it gets lifted out of penalization, then that's a big issue for you as a business. But
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Blimey. So have you seen any benefit from it yet?
No, not yet. So as well as obviously them rolling out this update, it's also real time now as well. So as they crawl the web, index pages and stuff, the kind of penalization or not penalization is calculated in real time. And so I think it's a case of them crawling the entire web again and kind of working things out as they go along.
Mm.
Because there's lots of, still in our particular sector, there's lots of spammy sites still in the index. So I'm hoping that it hasn't kind of run across our particular vertical and those sites are still going to get hit. We've always been quite good at keeping our disavow file up to date and stuff, so we've never really had or hoped to have and hope in the future going forward a Penguin issue, but there's certainly lots of spammy sites in the index for our search terms, so we're hoping they're going to get hit. And other people have been saying on Twitter, there's been polls going up saying, have you noticed any update yet, and about 80% of people are saying no so far, so
right,
we are kind of all hoping it's just a rollout thing. We'll get around to getting our sites or crawling our sites eventually.
Cool.
Yeah,
that'll be good. Excellent. So I've had a busy couple of weeks, really, with this childcare expo.
Oh, yeah. How did it go?
It went okay, yeah. It was, The Friday was a bit quiet, and not many people came through. And then the Saturday was much better, many more people on the Saturday. So I ended up getting 15 follow-ups, basically, which looked promising. And though that's more than I got at the last one in Manchester by a few. It's still not a lot, but it's more. And I've got a couple of demos lined up from that already. In fact, 3 demos lined up from that already, and then I'll follow up with the others that I've, you know, re-follow up with them next week and see if I can get any more out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's... I was thinking on the way back, actually, in the car, the amount of time that it takes, because Andy Bryce tweeted me while I was there asking he was interested in how much time it takes to sort of get prepared and do one of these things. So I was going to go into that a bit later, if that's all right.
Mm.
But yeah, it's... I was thinking about the amount of time that it takes compared to the amount of leads you get, whether just sitting down with a list and a phone would be better for the same amount of time, you know. But it's difficult to tell.
Well, what have you got? Because you had that list, didn't you? So you can...
Yeah, I can give it a go. Yeah, but... I can give it a go. I mean, I think the key is the discipline there, because if you're at the expo, you've got to be there between 10 and 4 when it's open, you know. And people are checking up on you to make sure you are, sort of thing, you know. So whereas when you're trying to do it yourself and you're phoning people up and you're getting people not interested and all the rest of it, and all that sort of disappointment that you get when you do calling, it's much more tempting to give up. So I think the discipline is a problem there, but I should give it a go, certainly.
And how are you with the, because you had 5 leads, didn't you, last time we spoke? How's that conversion going into customers?
Right, so I'm losing track a bit because I've got it all in this CRM, but I've got several on the go, so I've been taking lots of calls. So this week I've had already 4 calls, and last week I had a similar number, but only from those I've got two going forward. So two want to do the next stage, which, because they've got slightly different setup to existing clubs that we've got on there, I've encouraged them to go through the test system first. I'm going to set them up in test so they can check that it's going to work for them. So that's those two. And there are 2 more that need to get buy-in from their managers. So one of them is really good, actually. She's a manager of these clubs, and it's a charity. So the charity committee make the decisions in terms of financial spend. But they were about to buy a big nursery software system. Mm. But then she got my email from my email campaign and decided to put that on hold until she'd seen Kids Club HQ. When she saw it, she was saying, well, I'm going to recommend that we use this, actually, because the problem with the nursery systems is that they're all singing or dancing, and it's far, far more than they need.
Mm.
So half the software doesn't get used. So she was quite keen. So, but again, she's got to go and get a referral from, she's got to go and check with the volunteer board or whatever it is to make sure that it's okay. But I'm hopeful on that one. And then the other one is similar sort of situation. She needs to get feedback from managers before coming further. So yeah, it's not too bad. It's quite frustrating in how many calls I get set up. So I said I've done 4 this week, 4 last week, and I've got half of them are moving forward. The other half were, one person, I started to go through the demo and she stopped me halfway through and said, the problem with this is that half of our customers, half of our parents, don't even have email addresses at the moment.
Right.
I'm not even sure that, I'm not convinced that that's actually true. Maybe that she doesn't know they've got email addresses, you know. But she was adamant, and so I, no matter how hard I tried to talk her to continuing and seeing the rest of it, she didn't want to go on. So that was one. And the others were similar, really. I've had some telephone conversations that weren't demos. So these 4 that I'm counting, they're not all demonstrations. Some of them are just initial calls. And the other ones were basically either they thought it was too much money, and they didn't have such a big problem in the first instance, so, you know, they weren't really prepared to spend any money on it, I think, was the gut feel. Yeah, I mean, that was the main thing, really. They didn't feel that they needed something, so it didn't go any further.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a bit disappointing, but I think 50% of the calls turning into something that might go somewhere is not bad.
What was the that nursery system that they're looking into getting before they found out about you?
Good question.
Do you know how much that was?
I've got it written down, but I don't know. It was more than the software that I'm providing.
Significantly more?
Yeah. So it should. I think it's going to be a goer for that. I can't see why they would turn it down, but I have to wait and see. The This is the problem. There's so much nursery software out there, and a lot of the people I spoke to at this childcare expo, because it's a childcare expo, it's aimed at sort of early years, which is mainly nurseries and preschools. And so those people will buy this nursery software, off-the-shelf nursery software, and then if they start up an after-school club or a holiday club or whatever, they'll just use that, even though it's not ideal and not, you know, completely suited to the needs for the after-school club. And there's so much of this software out there. Some of it's really expensive, and some of it's similar to what I'm charging. So it's difficult to pitch sort of, you know, in terms of monetary value to them around those levels. But so far, I've been pitching the level of £49 a month, and that's not going down too badly. I don't think generally people that I think are looking for a solution anyway consider that to be a reasonable price, I think.
Mm.
So yeah, so I'm not too concerned about that at the moment.
I think as well, this will perhaps come on to what I'll talk about a bit later, you know, because we've been talking about, you know, whether you want to be part of a manual sales process for selling that.
Mm.
But when you work it out as being, you know, £600 a year, if someone was, you know, spending that much on an individual downloadable piece of software, they would expect some kind of, you know, sales process to happen, I think, and someone to talk to and do a video. It's just, again, it's the SaaS problem, isn't it, of not getting all the money up front.
Yeah.
And it being a monthly income rather than, you know, all in one go.
Yeah, but I think if the software fits for them and they get on with it, they're unlikely to change, you know, because it will save them a lot of time. And the customers I've got on there are all, you know, well, the ones I've spoken to recently anyway are all still very happy with it and saying how much time it's saving them and that. So I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't switch quickly. You know, I don't think churn within a few months would be a problem. I think it'll be maybe a couple of years sort of thing if people do churn at all. But who knows, you know? I mean, I'm so soon into it, it's difficult to tell.
Yeah, cool.
So what about golf.io? How have things been going with that?
Well, not that great. There's a few things I've been doing with VoucherCodes Pro that I can just go over first.
Okay.
This is carrying on from kind of the process that we've been doing over the past few months, really. It's been removing some dead pages. So these are retailer pages that don't get any hits from Google organic search. So we're kind of thinking they're low quality pages still. So deleting those ones. One thing I've been testing that I've been getting some good results from, is testing various titles and meta descriptions for improving the click-through rate in Google.
Oh, right.
So another thing that Google have announced, or, you know, has been in the background for a while, is Rank Brain as being one of their ranking signals. And it's kind of their machine learning part of the, you know, they've got various different signals coming in on, I think there's 200 signals, they say, but a lot of people assume that there's three big ones, which is links, content, and then this new Rank Brain thing. And one of the key things that people are guessing goes into Rank Brain is the click-through rate from the Google search results, and then if people stay on your page, so don't bounce straight back.
Okay.
So yeah, I've been able to make quite a good change on our click-through rates from Google, which is good, because the problem was, you know, when we had like 1,000-2,000 retailers on our site, it was difficult to write you know, custom titles and meta descriptions for each one, so right. We kind of auto-generated them to a certain degree. But now for some of the main bigger retailers, I'm going through and writing custom ones. And there's these things called power words that you can use that are like words that encourage people to click, such as, you know, I'm trying to think of some now, but I can't think of astounding savings and
right,
things
yeah.
like that.
Free is probably a power word.
Yeah. So Sumo Me put together a spreadsheet or a Google spreadsheet of all these different power words that you can use in theory if they fit the right concept. So I'll link to those in the show notes. And if you're doing any testing around click-through rates and titles and meta descriptions, those power words are a good thing to check.
Cool.
And then we've been testing out some new sales channels. So on our Facebook page, we've had about 50,000 people who've liked it historically for ages, as long as I can remember. We've never really found a good way of monetizing them. So we've been testing generally put up some of the deals and codes that we've had, but they've never really ever made any difference. But now we've started putting up individual products, and they're actually doing quite well. So our audience is typically female, aged 25 to 45, and so we've been putting up things like child toys that we've found that are popular in a sale and things like that, and that's actually going all right at the moment. It's making running profitably with us boosting the post as well. So,
oh, excellent.
We're going to see how well we can scale that, because it's quite difficult because, you know, people like Argos will put an item on sale, and if it's an attractive item and it's a good price, then it quite quickly goes out of stock. So we have to keep checking back every now and again to see that the item's still in stock and so on. So that's been some. It's been nice to find another sales channel that actually is profitable, and we'll see how much we can grow that.
Cool. That sounds good.
Yeah, so that's VoucherCodes Pro, and then Golf.io has kind of stalled a little bit. The cold email sequence stuff that I was kind of working on and spoke about last time, it just hasn't worked at all. So the idea was that I really wanted to automate kind of the sales process, I guess, rather than, you know, it being a manual process. But I was listening to Nathan Barry on Product People podcast. Jackson's podcast. Because I wasn't subscribed to it. I thought I'd have a listen, and I'd listen to a few of the back episodes. And Nathan Barry was on there from, he's got ConvertKit. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about when he grew it up to $5,000 monthly recurring revenue. And then a couple of episodes later, it's probably a longer period of time than what that sounds like, he was on there again because he had hit $1 million annual run rate. And it was interesting just to get to $5,000 and then even getting to the $1 million annual run rate, he attributed a lot of that to direct sales. And he said in the podcast, and you can look at this in Bear Metrics actually, around 75% of his customers are $29 a month customers, but he's still going to, or was at that stage, going to the effort of doing a direct sales approach. So, you know, reaching out to them with an individual email and having a Trello board and following up with them and moving them across from one list to the other as the prospects either improved or decreased and so on. And so I think I'm going to try that approach for a few weeks with Golf.io and try a more manual sales approach. I tried that last week, and again, I didn't really get great success, but I was on a mastermind call with the Southwest Bootstrappers Slack channel that I'm a part of.
Oh, yeah.
We did the first mastermind call earlier in the week, and we were chatting about what we've been doing and what we're trying to do and so on. And Jim, who's a part of that, suggested making a bigger point of, because I haven't got any return on investment on the kind of sales email I put together. This is a mistake and the assumption I've made is, you know, I think it's such a great offer that it's a no-brainer, but people still need to understand, you know, that they're going to still make more money from the investment of £25 a month or whatever that they're putting into it. So I've gone to Gareth, and I need to go to Carl, who I've done the websites and work for, and Gareth's given me, you know, a good testimonial of, you know, it generates 2 to 3 new inquiries each week, and hopefully Carl will have something similar as well. So I can show for those guys, all these golf pros who spend £25 a month, you know, if all goes to plan, we'll be able to generate them, you know, many hundreds of pounds, you know, to come back into their back pocket. So
that's good. Yeah. Excellent.
That would be good to try.
So you stick to the emailing or sort of online approach rather than calling?
Yeah, I'm going to do that still, because knowing the golf pros and how quite busy they are in terms of working in the shop or taking lessons, calling them doesn't really work,
right,
from what I found. I mean, if they drop me an email back and say, you know, can we hop on a phone call or something, I'm more than would be happy to schedule a time to do that. But I think for an initial outreach, I'll stick with emails.
Yeah, fair enough. Cool.
So yeah, that's in terms of golf.io stuff.
Excellent, that's good. So, I mean, the only other bits I've been doing really, I've been doing a bit of feature development. So one of my existing customers want to bring on their after-school clubs as well, and so I've been doing some work for them to get those that they needed before they could bring them on. And it's work that kind of benefits everybody, really. So I thought I'd bite the bullet and do that. So I've been working on that a bit as well. There's a little bit of sadness, I suppose, in me, because I've put in a proposal for a freelance contract. So the last project I worked on before sort of going full time on this was for a particular company who've basically been using the software happily, but they've found a few enhancements that they want to make things simpler. So they've got an administration team that use the software, and they've found a lot of enhancements that they'd like. So in usual sort of big company style, they've got to get proposals from at least 3 different companies, I think it is. So they asked me to put in a proposal, and I was umming and ahhing and thinking, you know, I'll use the word easy money. It's not easy money. I've still got to do the work, obviously, but it's I can do it quite easily because I know it's ASP.NET, you know, it's technology stuff I know inside out, and the product I know Inside Out because I built it from scratch, so it would be a relatively straightforward project for me. So I kind of thought I can either... The problem with the Kids Club stuff is it's not growing quickly enough, and I can't see a way to grow it quickly enough to get to that magic number that I need so that I don't have to do the freelancing. And because this is kind of a relatively straightforward project and it will lengthen my runway a bit, then I thought I'd go for it. So I've put in a proposal saying I'll do 3 days a week, and we'll see what happens.
Yep.
If I get it, it'll make things a bit tough, but you know, it'll mean that there's more money in the bank for next year.
It gives you, well, if you're working on that for 3 days a week, you've got those 2 days for Kids Club stuff, and it'll make you focus on the important stuff again, won't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think it will be a distraction, and I won't get as much done. I've got to accept that. That's if I get the project. I'm assuming I will, but who knows, you know. Yeah, it'll be a distraction, and it will slow me down, but I will still be able to carry on working on it, so it's not like it will completely fall flat on its face. So, and it will also, you know, top up the war chest, so to speak, so that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because my theory was that I'm not going to look for new contracts, and I think if any other clients had come along with something, I'd have said no. But because this is kind of a follow-on from the last project, it's pretty straightforward, and it's quite short. Plus, they're a really good client that have given me lots of work over the past sort of 8 to 9 years. Mm. Not 8 years, 7 years, the past 7 years. You know, if it did all go nipples up next year or whatever, and I decided I couldn't carry on with the Kids Club software, I'd need to start finding projects, and they're a good place to go to. So if I let someone else take this project now, you know, it could usurp me from my position. So that's sort of fed into it a bit as well.
Yeah.
It may turn out to be a mistake, but let's see what happens. See if I get offered it first.
You've always got to have a plan B, haven't you? And money in the bank is always a good plan B.
Yeah, and as long as I can keep it a couple of days a week to keep this ticking over, then that's not the end of the world, I don't think.
Mm.
It's a disappointment, but it's not the end. Anyway, should I go into a bit of the sort of time spent on this expo?
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
So I haven't really recorded this diligently, so this is kind of in retrospect looking at emails and things and working out roughly how long I spent on each thing, but... There's a bit more to it than I'd actually anticipated, and if I'd tracked it, I'd have known that. So that's perhaps a lesson for the future. But so I've done two of them now. This one in Coventry was the second one. The first one obviously took more time because I had more stuff to set up. So what I thought I'd do is I'll just go through it as if it was the first one, which will, you know. So if you had never done one before and you're setting up from scratch, that would be more appropriate. So the first thing is obviously finding the exhibition. The one I did was an exhibition rather than a conference. I'm not sure if there's a technical definition, but the exhibition was more like a trade show where people turned up during the day. It was free for them to get in, and that they either got tickets in advance or they turned up on the day, and they just wandered around and then basically went home. So there wasn't people staying overnight, you know, to come along to seminars and things like that. But there was just traffic during the day. And so, yeah, the first thing is to find one that's appropriate for you. I didn't spend very long looking for that. It's quite easy to do, just search in Google. The difficulty is knowing how really appropriate it is to your market. You know, for me, it wasn't 100% obvious whether it would be appropriate or not. So I spent a bit of time trying to find that out. So I probably spent an hour or so trying to find things that people had written about it and the sorts of people that had been going to the exhibition, and then in the end I actually rang the organisers and spoke to them, and although it wasn't convincing, I decided to go anyway. So I probably spent an hour or so doing that, and then once I decided to go, you've got all the forms and stuff you've got to fill in, and some of them aren't as obvious as you'd want them to be, and so you have to think about them a bit. So I reckon there's probably another hour or so just filling all the forms in, and then some other practical things you've got as well are things like if you don't have use of a car, for example, how are you going to get there? So you've got to sort out your travel and your hotel and all that sort of stuff. So those sort of admin-y type things, I'd reckon, you know, it's just a couple of hours, but it can take you by surprise if you don't budget for it. And then a lot of the work went into the marketing materials. So you need, you know, you basically get a bit of space in this exhibition area, and the stand I had was 2 meters by 1 meter, and that was the smallest that they did. I don't know if they do any smaller, but that is quite small. But you've got to fill it, obviously, and there are a few things you need to think about. So you need something which will, as people are walking around, they probably have a couple of seconds as they're walking past your stall, a few seconds to get an idea of what it is you do. And so you need sort of a pull-up banner or something along those lines, which has got a list of the sort of main things that your target market would be interested in. You also need some handouts, because people often will just say, you know, oh, I'm not really interested in talking to you, but I want to take a leaflet or something, you know. So you have to have enough leaflets and stuff to hand out, business cards, obviously, and that sort of stuff. So I also had a little table with like a tablecloth, just a plain blue tablecloth over the top, to put these things on, so that if I was talking to somebody, then they could just grab a leaflet themselves, etc. So I reckon getting the marketing materials in place. What I did was I didn't have a logo or anything at that point, and so I hired someone on from Odesk to do all that for me. So they designed the logo and they put together a leaflet. Obviously, I had to write the content for the leaflet, but they put together a logo, business cards, the leaflet design, and the pull-up banner design. So I just had one pull-up banner for the first one. Now, that obviously takes a fair bit of time from me as well to manage this person and feedback, you know, on the initial designs that they do. It's difficult to pin it down, but it took between more than half a day, probably getting closer to a day, to sort all that out. You know, things like writing the copy for the leaflet isn't straightforward, especially if you haven't got a lot of copy around already. So that's probably a budget a day for that, if you're going to outsource the design and everything. Another thing that you need to think about is what you're actually going to say on the stand. So, you know, as people are walking past, you need to have something prepared in your head to talk to them about, because otherwise you'd just be floundering around and not knowing what to say. So it's good to have a few open questions designed, I think. So you've got, depending, you know, you sort of introduce yourself or whatever, and then you find out what the people do, and then you've got some questions to go straight in with. And you also need a bit of an elevator pitch, you know. So if someone says, what do you do then? You know, you need to be able to give them a concise answer. So that takes a bit of time as well. And, you know, I reckon I've probably spent at least a couple of hours just sitting down, thinking about those things, and then revisiting them and rewriting them and that sort of thing. So another thing to look out for is any opportunities that the exhibition organisers give you to promote yourself, your product, using their channels. So the only avenue I really had with this expo was they'd publish news articles. So if you sent them news articles about your product, then they would publish them. So I spent a bit of time writing an article to go on that. Again, it's probably only a couple of hours, but it's still significant when you add it all up. And so, you know, depending on what avenues you've got open to you on that front, it will take different amounts of time. And then the other thing that was recommended to me by Ed McArdle was to contact anybody you know that might be going to the expo, that might be your customer. Get in touch with them and let them know you'll be there. So I didn't have, at this point, I didn't have much of a list at all. In fact, I didn't have any list. So I went through and did some searching for people that were in the area where the expo was going to be. You know, I think I picked like a 50-mile radius and tried to find people in that. And so that involved quite a lot of time in terms of searching on Google and any other means I could for getting those contacts. I reckon I probably spent 3 or 4 hours just trying to find contacts, and then going through those contacts, narrowing down the list a bit more. It took a bit longer, so you'd probably say about 5 hours for that. You can also look at what the exhibition organizer gives you. Now, the exhibition organizer for this exhibition didn't actually give us anything in terms of feedback on who's going to be coming. So I haven't seen this myself, but apparently some conferences and exhibitions will actually give you a list of the people that are attending, or if they don't give you a list, they'll actually allow you to send something to them. So that's worth looking out for, but that didn't count for me. So then once I've got my list of people to email, then I basically, you have to write the email, obviously, so you have to draft up something that you can send to them, and I set it up in a CRM system and sent it via the CRM system. So that probably took about 3 hours in all, in terms of drafting up the email, making sure I was happy with it, testing the sending of it, making sure the links worked, all that sort of stuff, and then loading up the contacts into the CRM and sending the email. So you've probably got 3 hours-ish there. And then finally, you've got attending the expo. So you've got to think about how long it's going to take you to get there, whether you have to travel up the day before. In my case, I did have to travel up the day before, so I went in the evening. I didn't miss much work time, but of course, you're getting everything ready, packing your bags and everything, all that sort of adds up. And the expo I went to was 2 days. So in total, it's probably 3 days, you know, if you count the traveling there and traveling back, and all the getting ready and stuff. And then finally, once you've been to the expo, you've got your list of contacts, and then you've got to follow up with them. So depending on how many you've got, obviously that'll take a different amount of time. So I drafted up an email which I was going to send to people, and I only had 15 follow-ups to do. So I basically just went through with each one, added them into my CRM system, and then drafted, took the draft email and tailored it a bit towards them, and then sent that off to those people. So that, you know, that took 3 hours again, probably, to go through all that as well. So in total, I reckon I've got it up to about 5 days worth of effort for a 2-day expo.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Which is quite a lot, yeah. Now that started from scratch with nothing else around, but you know, and it's adding in all the little things like the admin stuff, which you probably don't think about, but when you do add it all up, yeah, it's quite a lot of time. So I mean, I was saying earlier, if I actually sat down and spent 5 days on the phone, I'm pretty sure I'd get more than 2 customers. So
try next week.
Yeah, well, that's a nice thought. Yeah, maybe I should. But yeah, it's interesting to do it like that. There's a lot of things that you need to think about as well, though, about the expo. Because, so, for example, on the Friday evening this time, they do exhibitor drinks after the Friday, and I went along to that, and I made a lot of good contacts. You know, talking to people and sort of getting to know them a bit, who are in the market and in the industry, and some of those could become useful at some point in the future. Some of those could pass on information about your product to other people. You never really know, you know. And some of them are like publishers of magazines and things, so you could get advertising, or because they know you, you might get an advertorial or something that you could do with them. So I think you need to take that into account as well, that there's a bit of a networking element there. And I've certainly got a couple of people that I'm keeping in touch with in terms of trying to get opportunities for the future for publishing to their audience and that sort of thing. So that's another side effect. And something that somebody, one of the other exhibitors was talking about, is you're building up a brand as well. So the people that go to these exhibitions, if they see you and then see you again and then see you again, you know, even if they don't come and talk to you, you're building up a presence in their mind. And that's that marketing thing, isn't it, about how many touches it takes somebody to become a customer. But it's not just the potential customers, it's also the other exhibitors, you know. If they keep seeing you, they know you're not a fly-by-night, and so then the possibility of working with them in the future might be a bit more likely. So there are a few other side effects as well as just getting customers that I think you need to think about. But yeah, it is a lot of time to spend for my instance, quite a low number of customers.
So are there any more coming up that you're... They do
this particular one. They do 3 a year. There's one in Manchester, one in Coventry, and one in London. And the London one is supposed to be the busiest. I'm tempted to do it, but having added all this up, I'm kind of thinking, is it worth it? I don't know. I think if I did do it, it would be just to see, as a comparison to the others, you know, how many more leads I get, really.
Yeah. Well, you won't know until you spend that 5 days on the phone, though, the whole week, will you? And have the comparison of customers. And if you want to go for a networking opportunity and that's going to be the busiest one, then...
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's quite difficult to sum it up in terms of how useful it is. But, you know, and also talking to people on the stand. So even if they don't become customers, just talking to them, you pick up a lot of information about how they run, for me, how they run their clubs, what sorts of things they're currently using, you know, all that information. Yes, you can get it on the phone, but I think it's much easier face-to-face to be able to have those sorts of conversations. And also, it's easy for people to either not answer your call or just hang up on you or whatever when you're phoning. But as people are walking past your stand, it's really easy just to grab their attention and talk to them, even if it's just for a few seconds when they say, oh, I'm not interested. You know, I think that's worth thinking about as well. So for me, I think that the main reason I've got such a low number of leads from this is because my market at this exhibition is probably 10% or less of the people that go. So if you had an exhibition or a conference or something in your market where you've got a higher percentage of people that will be there that could be your customers, then you'd probably get much better output than I've got.
Yep. Yeah, okay. I guess, yeah, when we've gone to SharePoint conferences back in the day for Lighting Tools, almost everyone there was a potential customer.
Yeah, exactly. So if you've got that situation, you know, you're going to get loads more leads.
Yeah. Cool. Very good.
Yep. Cool. Hope that's useful, at least a little bit.
So to kind of continue the, what we discussed on the podcast and stuff in terms of shiny new objects and stuff.
Yeah.
From listening to some of Product People's podcasts and Justin Jackson's stuff, I started listening to his Mega Maker podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He's got about three podcasts, I think, and Mega Maker, I think, is the one he started at the start of the year.
Yeah, I listened to that one as well.
Yeah, I remember when I heard the idea for it, I thought it was a bit gimmicky, but having actually started listening to it, it's actually quite good.
Yeah.
And the idea at the start was for he was going to release something each week, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Whether it was a software product, a book, or a T-shirt, or I think the first one was a burrito, wasn't it? But it got me to thinking, one of the frustrations you have, or I have, while I'm working away on golf.io is, first of all, not seeing any progress. And secondly, you've always got that nagging doubt in the back of your mind, haven't you, about if you're spending all your time on this, you know, there's lots of other different ideas you could be working on.
Yeah.
And perhaps you're just wasting your time on, you know, a dead duck that, you know, you should be trying other stuff out. And so
that's the shiny object syndrome for you.
And so I've decided, or I'm going to try anyway, with the whole Mega Maker idea, is to try and do like a small little product, or I think it may well be feature as well, and try and get one done each week. And these are basically around tools as well that I'm going to use for my own businesses already, such as Voucher Codes Pro. And so the idea around the first set of stuff I'm going to build is going to be around SEO tools anyway, for kind of doing audits on your site. Because I helped a couple of people over the last couple of weeks who, you know, were like winning better rankings or getting more traffic from Google and stuff. And having helped those guys, I was kind of thinking, well, the stuff I did for them, I was just looking through source code and so on and so forth. And again, there are tools out there that do this already, but some are expensive, some are, you know, indifferent. But I thought, yeah, I'd build some myself. So, yeah,
I think that's cool, and it will help scratch your itch in terms of, you know, the shiny object syndrome and all that. But if you're going to make any money out of it, you've still got the same old problem as everything else, which is finding leads and, you know, converting those leads and all that sort of stuff. So, you know.
Yeah, and totally. So this is more of a making stuff for the sake of making it rather than making it to try and make money.
Yeah. I think that's, I like that idea, certainly. I mean, I've got ideas like that that I'd like to do as well, but I think I need to, if I'm going to get any product out during my working life, I need to focus on it. I think that's my issue, and I just need to get on with it, you know, try not to get onto any other little bits and bobs.
Yeah, so hopefully, I'm not going to say what they are, because I've got to build one over the weekend, actually, because I'm a bit behind schedule already.
So what are you doing, one a week, is it, you said?
Yeah, so I was going to say, hopefully by the next podcast, I'll have two bits done.
That'd be cool.
And then, well, because I say because features as well, because the first lot of stuff I'm doing is more around SEO tooling, so it will be kind of an additional feature to the existing tool, or like an additional thing it can check on your site rather than you know, a brand new type thing. But we'll see.
So maybe you could focus them on things that would, so after these first two, focus them on things that will help you automate your lead building sort of sort of process, so you can, because, you know, you say you want to automate your sales. I don't know if you've got any ideas for things that would help you do that.
I think that's a pipe dream, automating sales, to be honest.
I think you're probably right.
I think there's a manual, but there's a person involved in that process somewhere along the line, isn't there?
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
Cool.
All right, have you got any other stuff?
I did have Dan to talk about the Ryder Cup, but can't really.
Oh, that was depressing, wasn't it?
Yeah, so. Yeah.
I was listening to that on the way back from, it was a Saturday night on the way back from this exhibition.
Yeah.
And I was really enjoying it, listening to golf on the radio. I never thought I'd enjoy such a thing, but I did.
Yeah, it's quite good, isn't it? Yeah. The odds are always stacked against us because we're playing away over in the USA. They had wanted to extract revenge. And the only good thing is we've won it so many times over the past 25 years that it's good to keep the US team USA having an interest, because I think they were losing interest in the whole competition. But, 2 years' time, Paris, get revenge.
Yeah, that'll be good. We should go, actually. It's not far away, is it?
No, it's not, no.
Is it difficult to get tickets?
You don't play golf.
Yeah, well, I don't mind.
Should we go for the piss up?
Yeah. Take a leaf out of the Americans' book.
In the hole!
Cool. All right. I shall speak to you in a couple of weeks then.
Okay. All right. Cheers,
Martin. Cheers, Nick.
Bye.
Bye.